Are you intrigued by conspiracy theories and the strange, dark, and mysterious? If so, we invite you to subscribe to our new podcast, The Truth Behind the Lies, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Do you love podcasts and classic television? Do you want to listen to Secrets Uncovered, the Truth Behind the Lies podcast and rant radio, completely ad-free? At Limitless Broadcasting Network, we bring you all your favorites like The Carol Burnett Show, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and I Love Lucy without any interruptions. For just $7 a month and $80 a year, you can unlock over 90 hours of quality television and podcast programming. Don't miss out. Subscribe today at limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com, where endless entertainment awaits.
We have 9/11. It kind of reminds me of when Pearl Harbor happened. Or because that was, the president knew Pearl Harbor was going to happen before it happened. And it was just an excuse for us to get into the war. Just like
they knew that these planes were going to be hijacked well before they were hijacked.
Right. And people,
I'm not so sure
the government that. But they would get in trouble or they would get arrested if they tried to stop it.
Well, because they needed it.
Right.
And they're, you know, I personally, could they have put those planes into the buildings? Absolutely. Do I believe the planes are what brought down the buildings? I do not. Do I think that there was something else added to these planes as they went in? Most likely. Or did they have, you know, directed energy strikes? Did they have missiles? Did they have bombs implanted in the planes as they were flown in? I think most of the passengers on these planes were incapacitated. There were reports. I can't remember which plane it was. This lady got a phone call out. And she said there was gas coming out of the vents. She was trying to call her husband, and she was talking about there was gas coming out of the vents and people were falling unconscious. So,
we can find that. I never heard that.
You didn't hear about that one?
I did not hear about that. Tell me more about that.
That was covered on Alex Jones's show.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's the king of covering the 9/11 conspiracies and stuff.
It's hard to find these days.
I think a lot of the 9/11 stuff
has been scrubbed out.
Absolutely. Just looking up stuff for this episode, you find a lot of debunked conspiracy theories. You can't really find anything that actually shows you a spot for true conspiracy theories. It'll give you a list, but it'll tell you the debunked.
Right.
You know.
Right. No, I agree 100%. Looking up this, trying to figure out like what's A to B, when the president knew stuff, when he didn't know stuff, just how the buildings fell. Well, I was watching the video. Demolition. It was steel can't melt, and you remember
steel can melt, but not at that temperature.
So at a certain temperature, it will melt. But like when the plane hit it and they were like, all this fuel helped it melt. That's not true. It's not hot enough.
But they said that it got hot enough to weaken the steel. Okay, I'll give you that. If it weakened with the winds, it doesn't matter how calm a day it is. The wind that those buildings have hitting it at all times.
Oh, for sure.
If it weakened, it would have collapsed like that.
Right.
And it would have taken out all kinds of people in building. Right. It wouldn't have come down.
It's
going
to collapse to the side since people can't see you. So it's going to collapse to the side.
It wouldn't have pancaked like that. You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't have come like
straight down. It would have collapsed to the side.
Right. So I don't buy it. I never have. And most of the people who have heard these stories or were around during it don't believe it either.
Right.
Well, it doesn't matter. You can prove any theory. If you throw enough money at it and find the right people to scream about it, you can prove any side of your story.
Absolutely. And
I believe that they have just found, you know, quack scientists who say that, you know, the planes themselves were the ones that took down the buildings.
You know
what I mean? Like the jet fuel and the paper and cardboard, whatever else was inside there, was enough to bring down those buildings.
Right. Are you fighting with your dog?
I am.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Is she trying to play with you?
While I'm on, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what my dogs try to do. So 9/11, all the what do you think their agenda was? Do you think it was overall the Patriot Act and then going into Baghdad?
I think it was a multifaceted plan. I think that in order to get everybody on board with being able to do such a...
So you needed something to happen.
In order to do some kind of attack like that and to get people on... Because, I mean, we're talking about a domestic attack.
Right.
A very large domestic attack. We're not just talking about the Twin Towers. We're talking about putting the Pentagon into it. And then the other plane that went over, what was it, Pennsylvania that went down?
Yeah, there were supposed to be like four planes.
Yep.
One went over Pennsylvania. One was going, and then they said a plane hit the Pentagon.
Yep.
But did you hear the reporter say, there's no plane here? There's right. nothing. There's no Somebody plane there. Live and on plus, air saying that.
The hole where the plane supposedly went into the Pentagon was too small.
Right.
It's too small. There's no way that a Boeing 747 would have made that small of an impact.
Plus, right.
We're talking about DC. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You mean there's no restricted way. Airfields there are in DC?
Do you if know you how come within a certain amount of miles, they'll shoot you down, regardless if you're a commercial airline or not.
Right.
You're getting shot down.
Absolutely.
So you're telling me a commercial plane made it that far without fighter jets being scrambled and being right alongside that thing and taking it down if they had to? No. Give me a
somebody,
break.
Somebody who should have known about this. Like you
Everybody
can't
knew about
far.
It. We're talking about radar.
Right.
Just radar. Just primitive radar. Damn plane when it was 300-400 miles away from it. They knew the trajectory it was on. They knew exactly where it was going.
Why do you think they didn't do that? Why did scramble jets and shot it down?
They did. I'm sure they did. That plane didn't hit the Pentagon. They used that as a distraction.
As a distraction for something else.
And had a missile strike that hit the Pentagon. That's the only thing that could have moved fast enough and create that kind of damage and get past our defenses and do the damage it did to the Pentagon. They used a smart bomb, a smart missile that went in there and just, boom, took it out. That was it.
Do you remember right after 9/11, any cameras, like any buildings, like if you're a 7-Eleven and you had a camera facing in there,
it's all confiscated.
Yeah, they went in there and confiscated all the video right after the attack.
Right.
And they did it to every store.
Yes, they did.
Why would they do that? Because they want something covered up.
Yep. They're afraid of what people might see or what might get released. And during that time period, you know, our technology wasn't what it is. There was no way to instantly share it.
Right.
Today, you could. There's no way you could get away with that.
Facebook.
Right.
What was the popping social media platform back then? I don't even think we had one yet.
MySpace?
I think it was MySpace. Yeah. But I don't even think people were sharing this on MySpace.
No, it really wasn't much. Nobody was doing that kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
I mean, your cell phones, we still had, you know, one button scroll through your letters on top of the number to try and send a text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, yeah, that was a different time.
It's been confirmed that MySpace was the key social media back in those days. So thank you for the confirmation, Samantha. So I got a text. She was like, oh, it's MySpace.
Yep.
So can you imagine being in the building at this time? And like the people that were there.
Oh, yeah.
They were just like hopping out of the windows. What do you think their last thought was? Like, I'm going to die
one way or another. I'm going to die. So I'm going to go at my hands. Either I'm going to burn alive or I'm going to.
I'm assuming that's why people jumped.
Yep.
Because the fire was so. So it went into like the first plane got hit like the 52nd floor or the 60th floor. And the other plane hit like.
Well, see, here's the thing. 25th
floor.
There wasn't really fire. You can watch any videos of that at all. You see some smoke,
right?
Because there is a little bit, but it's not like it was a roaring, fire that was stopping people from getting out. Those planes hit stairwells. They hit elevators and stairwells. They blocked off those they blocked off the exit, so all those people were trapped.
Right. So before the actual attacks happened, I hear they were working on the elevators with armed guards around them, like days before it happened. And people are like, that's weird. Why do these technicians need all these armed guards around them? Why are they working?
So they could disable all the methods of escape for all these people.
Right.
You can take down a building, but if you it's a tragedy if the building goes down, but it is a true disaster if the loss of human life is enormous.
Right. And that's why they want as much loss of life that day. Almost 3,000 people were killed.
Human life means nothing to these people.
Absolutely not. Nothing. We're both expendable. Highly expendable.
It's not just us both. It's everybody on this planet. There are the haves and then there are the have nots. They believe that they are entitled to everything, and we are
their slaves.
The serfs. We are the ones that if that expression, in order to make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs. We're their eggs, and they don't care how many eggs they break. I mean, they just don't. That's where human resources comes from.
Right.
We're just a resource.
Right.
We're the dumb breeders. You know what I mean? So.
Right. Right. No,
that's
absolutely
the way they look at us.
People in the building on 9/11, the people that got out, they kept saying they heard pops. Pop, pop, pop.
Uh-huh.
Before like big explosions happen.
Yeah, it's the explosions. It was the explosives going off, getting ready to detonate the building so it could drop, taking out the support beams.
Absolutely.
It happens at any demolition.
If you look at when they tore down the Wynn or the Stardust from the casino out in Vegas, it went down the same way the towers went down.
Yeah,
the same identical thing. And then they say, no, a plane did this.
Nope. There's no way. And I mean, anybody who's a rational thinker, I mean, you don't even have to be the smartest person on the planet. If you just look at it logically.
Right.
There's no way. No way that makes sense to you. It doesn't matter how many times this is the definition of gaslighting. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And people that actually believe that this happened. I mean, I believe the tragedy happened. I believe the disaster happened.
Right.
That is not, but it's the method that they use to create this disaster.
Right.
And they did it to us. And our own government was complicit in doing this.
Well, it's not the first time the government has been complicit to do things like.
No, not at all.
In Cuba. They were trying to get us into war in Cuba. They were thinking about hijacking some bus and killing a bunch of people and saying the Cubans did it. And that would have got us to go out to war with Fidel Castro.
Yep.
But for some reason, that didn't happen. Pearl Harbor was an inside job. They knew exactly when the bombs were going to be. I mean, that's confirmed to this day. What else? I mean, the list can go on and on that it kind of reminds me of what we did to the Indians. We were friends with them, and then we gave them all these blankets full of smallpox and everything, and we just wanted their land.
Right.
And so it's kind of something like that.
100% it is.
So what do you think the outcome has been from all this?
The Gulf of Tonkin, that was another one that got us into Vietnam.
Explain that one for the viewers.
For the viewers, Gulf of Tonkin?
Yeah.
It was a, let's see, let me get it right. It's where the United States forces were carrying out covert amphibious operations on the North Vietnamese, and they were blaming it on others to get us into it.
Okay.
To get our involvement in Vietnam, because we were trying to stay out of it.
Right. We were trying to stay neutral.
Yep.
So
it was kind of the same with World War II. You know, we were staying out of that one.
I know. And I agree. Then
Pearl Harbor hit and we were in the war.
Yeah. And that they knew exactly if that happened, there would be an outcry of support. And then Americans, have you ever noticed if something happens to this country, we come together, Americans come together and want to fight.
Yeah.
That's one thing that they weren't counting on, especially with 9/11. The unity of being an American was so strong, especially after it went down. Oh, I'm a proud American, and everybody hanging up their flags. They counted on that. Nowadays.
They knew that. They knew that was going to happen. They knew that that was the perfect. They use predictive programming. They know exactly what it takes to push people to get the desired reaction that they want. They knew exactly what to do to get us right where they wanted us. We hook, line, and sinker agreed to the Patriot Act.
Oh, absolutely. We begged for it.
We had that security now, but yes. We gave up all kinds of liberties for it.
They can legally spy on us without warrants. Yeah, they can enter our property without warrants. If they think you're a terrorist, they can hold you indefinitely without going to court because of the Patriot Act.
Well, you got to really read these things because they can't just do this stuff, but it's real easy to classify you as something. It's real easy. I mean, you'd be surprised how loosely they use domestic terror. You know what I mean? They can put that title on anybody basically.
Well,
because it doesn't take very much to be called a domestic terrorist because all you are is
ties into the 9/11 as well.
Ish. Yes. He found out the truth about what was going on with the country, and then he decided he was going to do some rectification for it.
And that's how, right.
But, I mean, that's one version of it. The other version is he was an MK Ultra.
True.
You know, he was, what's the word I'm looking for? He was
a Manchurian candidate?
Well, under MK Ultra,
you can
he
go
was one of the. They just used that kind of mind control programming, round him up, sent him in there, and let him do his thing. I mean, he was the perfect patsy for it.
Right. I mean, we definitely should do an episode on the Oklahoma City bombing because that indirectly ties into all of this. We'll see what you think.
Right.
There's so many, like all these conspiracies are so convoluted. They're all interconnected.
Well, the problem with 9/11 is that so many people died
for greed.
It was greed. I mean,
it was over greed.
It was greed for some. It was over power control and, you know, the ability to spy on us all by some. It was over a family's, you know, butthurt philosophies, you know, that they wanted to get in there and get their name back, you know. Mm-hmm. But also there were items in Iraq that other power structures wanted control of.
Right.
You know, Iraq is supposedly had a working Stargate, and whoever has control of those Stargates has control of a lot of things. That's interdimensional travel right there.
Right.
Not to mention all the antiquities that proved where civilization began and where we came from. And the truth behind the Anunnaki.
That's exactly right. You're talking about the Anunnaki.
And those who control that kind of stuff control the true power. I mean, greed and family vendettas and things like that, that's minor stuff. But it's when you get into the real things, the beginning of our species, you know?
Right.
Controlling the actual
world.
Controlling the implements that help these interdimensional beings go back and forth, you know?
Right.
That's a pretty profound power to have control of. And to have a working one. And I've heard that it's not the only working one, and there's a few of them in the world.
Where would be another one?
That was an easy one for us to get to, because it was already in a conflict area, so that was easy for us to get to.
Was that in the green zone?
Do what?
Was that in the green zone? I feel like it was. I feel like they made a movie that it was like looking for weapons of mass destruction, and they cleared it. But the reason why they went in there was because of the Stargate.
Oh, well, they've made movies about all kinds of stuff like that. But the only weapons of mass destruction were what was found in these libraries and in these museums. And the true information, you know, because the things that were there could have destroyed religion
and brought it down to his knees.
Religion is the main way to control the population.
Right.
I mean, they've been doing it for a millennia. So if you could topple religions by uncovering what was actually documented in their, you know, physically there, just needing to be shown to people, they're never going to let that out.
You know, absolutely, what I mean?
There's no way. The churches make too much money and have too much control over people. And can you imagine what would happen to people if they were to find out that, you know, their belief system isn't exactly what they think it is? And I'm not here to argue theology with anybody like that. I mean, believe what you want to. That's a great thing about this world. You can believe anything you want. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, there are those who believe in that. What is it? The flying spaghetti monster thing. So
you lost me on that. This flying spaghetti monster. What's that?
What are they? Pastafarians?
I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see.
We don't know.
Yeah, Pastafarianism, also known as the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
I'm saying
you can believe in whatever you want.
Right,
But if there is proof of the origin, you know, the origination of our species in the Middle East, you know,
they're never going to let that out.
That's not going to be something that is ever going to see the light of day.
Absolutely not.
Not just I mean, that's like when they went to Egypt. Every time there's a major archaeological find in Egypt, the governments go in there first.
Right.
And they see what's there before it's allowed to be released to any museum or anywhere like that.
The
Smithsonian is controlled by the government.
And it's very
Have so much stuff that'll never be seen by anybody.
Just like the Vatican does too.
The Vatican's archives books.
I hear they have a working time machine that they can look into the past. They have goggles that you look in and you can see the past and what happened. And it's at the Vatican. They have things sealed off that they'll never bring up. You know?
I do know what you're talking about.
That came out couple years ago. A whistleblower came out and was like, yeah, there's a working time machine there. I can't remember what it's actually called.
The chronovisor
that you could look in the past.
Well, I'm not saying they do and I'm not saying they don't, but if they go through such trouble to debunk and make sure that we don't ever get the chance to see any of these things, you know, it makes me think that maybe there's some truth to it.
So you don't ever think there'll be a time where all this stuff, it just comes out and says, yep, aliens are real. Everything that we've came out and said is a lie. There's people on Mars. Well, we have bases on Mars. All this.
They're working on. I mean, there are some things that are coming out that they have to. It's just getting too hard to control. The way the genie is almost out of the bottle and they can't put it back in. They're starting to have to extraterrestrials. They're slowly starting to admit.
They're there. They're real.
They've told us for 100 years that, you know, there's no such thing as aliens. You know, don't believe this. Don't believe that. If they go back and completely say, you know what, hey, we lied to you. This is what we found. This is what's here. They lose all credibility. People will be in an uproar. Right. There's too many people that are too invested in it. You still have a large majority of the public that will believe hook, line, and sinker whatever the government tells them. And even the ones that do question a little bit are still in the back of their mind like, well, no, there's no way they would actually lie to us, you know, because they're our government. They're for us, you know, and we get new people in there. So how could they pop? Because everybody has a way to be controlled. Right. It doesn't matter who you are. If you make it into politics, they've got a way to control you. Right. They're going to find a way to control you. They're going to find some way to gather incriminating evidence or get you in a compromising scenario.
Something. Everybody can be blackmailed.
And you are going to be under their control. And for most people, it's money. There's no way that these people go into public office, you know, barely rubbing two nickels together and coming out multimillionaires. Right. You know what I mean? Because
they're being paid to keep their mouth shut.
Well, not necessarily mouth shut. It's to push whatever line they want. Or it doesn't matter if it's pushing that, you know, 9/11 was, you know, a terroristic operation, and it was buildings were brought down by planes, and Building 7 was brought down by, you know, a piece of paper was on fire and caught the right draft and blew through the window and came down. You know, it started. Who knows?
They can always find
somebody to do that.
What did they say about Building 7 and why it came down?
They obfuscated that one. They never really gave anything.
But people just filled in the blanks and they were like, well, obviously something happened.
Yeah.
Nobody pushed that topic.
It was pushed, but it wasn't pushed on. If it was pushed on like the news or something like that, it was always shifted to another topic real quick.
Right.
You were always cut off. You were always spoken over, you know, nothing was ever, the only time it was ever talked about or pushed was through, you know, a conspiracy related show or somebody who was trying to bring upon a different topic or different narrative. Viewpoint. Yeah.
Right.
So,
but they would always make that person look crazy because they're just like, this can't be real. This is what the government said has happened. But if you look at the cold, hard facts, it just doesn't add up.
Well, and that was the thing with Alex Jones. I mean, Alex Jones has a lot of very, very good information on these topics. He put in a lot of legwork on it. Problem is, he's a very eccentric person. And he got wrapped up. You know what I mean? He gave him an inch to run on with him being crazy, and it discounted everything all the true things he brought up before. But this guy.
Subscribe now to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com to finish listening to the episode ad-free.
You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Hey, this is Tyler Manning. You're listening to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. Check it out.
What's your favorite scary movie?
What's the boogeyman?
You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish, understand?
It's showtime.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sammy.
And we're going to start off with a few announcements before we jump into our episode. I'm really excited about this episode, though. We're talking about one of my favorite vampire movies of all time. But before we jump into that, you can see we will be at River City Wrestling Con. And Where is it at? It's in St. Augustine. I always forget. We're in St. Augustine. It's June 7th and 8th. Mm-hmm. And we will be there. So if you want to buy some of our cool new merch, mm-hmm. I have several new Monster Squad designs. I'm working on a Billy and Stu shirt, like them solo.
Separately.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody from 90s Con and Spookala asking for that. I am working on that. I am also working on a Gale Weathers shirt mm-hmm. because a lot of people are like, oh, there's not, you don't see many, too many Gale Weathers shirts mm-hmm. out there.
It's
so
true.
So that's June 7th and 8th in St. Augustine, Florida. Mm-hmm. I think we'll actually both be there.
Yes, I should. Yeah, I believe I'm off that weekend. So I don't think I can help with setup, but I can be there for the fun part.
And our friend Custom Creations Peanut will also be there.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely
visit him.
Stop by his booth and mm-hmm. say what's up.
Yes.
Our next con is July 11th through the 13th. And that is Fanboy. That's mm-hmm. in Knoxville. So we will be there for that. I'm very excited about that. I have a new Buffy shirt. Spike and Drusilla shirt for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure by then I will have a Darla shirt. She's going to be at this con as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're very excited. We have a lot of cons coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I just wanted to pass this on. You can definitely subscribe to our website is up. Where you're currently streaming Bonanza, I Love Lucy show is on there, the Dick Van Dyke show is on there, Sharknado is on there, and we have unbelievable podcast shows, original podcast shows like the Secrets Uncovered, the Truth Beyond the Lies podcast,
mm-hmm.
because of our crossover episode with the Devil. Interview with the Devil.
Mm-hmm.
The next episode we're doing is Bohemian Grove.
Mm, so that should be available soon.
So if you want to listen to that, mm-hmm. subscribe to the network. And yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, always updating that. You will find videos of the Partner Complex on there.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere else you can see that. Mm-hmm. You're going to see videos of You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast.
Yeah, basically we're not really doing full video content on YouTube due to the issues.
Yes.
That we had in the past. So all the video content has kind of been on hold because it's going to be migrated over to the website.
Yeah. So. I don't understand why people, like celebrities are like, oh, join our Patreon where they have money and they can actually build a website. So we got away from that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely subscribe and see countless hours. We have over 90 hours of programming on there.
Mm-hmm.
So
very cool.
Yeah. Well, today, mm-hmm. very excited. We are talking about Interview with the Vampire.
No.
The film.
No, that is not the name. Do you said this is one of your favorite films?
Interview with the Vampire.
You said a vampire, didn't you?
No, I said Interview with the Vampire.
We'll have to play that back.
No, I said Interview with the Vampire.
We'll see. I thought you said a. So, but yes, if you did say the, that is the correct name. Most people get it wrong.
No, it's Interview with the Vampire.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Claudia, you've been a very naughty girl.
Oh, boy. Anyway, do you want me to dive in?
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, this movie obviously is rated R. It's a horror fantasy. Just over 2 hours. It's 2 hours and 3 minutes long. And it came out November 11th, 1994. So it's over 30 years old.
Yeah. Brad Pitt was... You forget how old Brad Pitt is. But he's been around Hollywood for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very young in this. So our description comes from Nick Reganis. I don't know. Thank you. Anyway, you left this on IMDb. Against the backdrop of a gloomy San Francisco, the nearly two-century-old vampire Louis de Pointe-du-Lac, very French name.
Yeah.
Recounts the unbelievable story of his eternal transformation and life worse than death to the skeptic reporter Daniel Molly. spanning 200 years of cruel betrayals, extreme solitude, and unquenched thirst. Louis' grimy fascinating tale pivots around his perpetually regrettable decision to embrace the dictatorship of blood and, above all, his maker. The seductive blonde aristocrat of death, Lestat de Lioncourt, is Louis' mystical epic of bloodshed genuine? Is this indeed an interview with a vampire? Dun, dun, dun. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. We've got one tagline. Drink from me and live forever.
That's good.
It does sum up the movie. It was directed by Neil Jordan, and writer on here is Anne Rice. So she's credited for the screenplay and, of course, the novel, where it came from. So although the screen credits do read that the screenplay is done by her, the script was heavily rewritten by the director. But Writers Guild rules meant that Rice got the credit.
So, well, that's still good. So she's still getting paid off of this.
It was like a collaboration.
Royalties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our cast, we have Tom Cruise as Lestat. Brad Pitt, as we said, is Louis. Antonio Banderas comes on as Armand. Stephen Ray is Santiago. Christian Slater is the reporter, Daniel. Kristen Dunst, very, very young. Kristen Dunst, I think she's like 12.
Yeah.
Was Claudia. And Dom is Zana Giordano is Madeline, who's like her companion. She's not in it very long.
Yeah, she had a very, like... She gets
very quickly.
She had a very... Yeah, we'll get into that.
Budget is estimated at $60 million, and an opening weekend it made $36 million. Its gross in the U.S. and Canada came in at $105 million, and worldwide was $224 million.
See, they could have done... They could have done another one.
You mean based on her books?
Well, they could have went off of her books. I know she has different books. Like, she has Interview with the Vampire, and then she has another one.
Mm-hmm.
I just...
Well, Queen of the Damned is an Anne Rice...
Right, right.
...story, so...
Right.
That's another one. That, I mean, they did make that into a movie. But yeah, I think... Now it's coming back to me. When you were saying that, they do... She does have one that's... I don't remember what it's called, but it's all about Lestat. And then I think Queen of the Damned is like the third one, maybe?
Yeah, it's like Vampire Lestat.
Yeah.
I think that's right after Interview with the Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ratings-wise, this has a 7.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 86% audience rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 4.4 out of 5 on Google. So not bad. Body count, 56 dead people.
56, wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, interestingly, Paramount Pictures had originally purchased the rights to the 1976 novel by Anne Rice shortly before it was published. So, okay. They bought it before it was even a thing.
Okay.
But then it went into, what do they call it, like development, turnaround, whatever. And that's why it took so long. And it got passed around and... Yeah, so, but I just thought it was interesting that they bought that before it was even published. Now, upon learning that Tom Cruise had been cast as Lestat, Rice was livid and stated that Cruise could not carry the part, calling the casting so bizarre, it's almost impossible to imagine how it's going to work.
Really?
And the worst crime in the name of casting since the Bonfire of the Vanities. I have no idea what that's referring to. Rice recused herself from the production and did not view the film until a producer sent her a VHS copy. Rice was so impressed by Cruise's performance that she wrote him a letter of apology and recorded a 2-minute video endorsing the film that was included as a pre-feature on the VHS releases.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so she won him over, basically, at the end of the day. The character Lestat's full name is Lestat de Lioncourt. He was based on Anne Rice's husband, Stan Rice. Lestat was even given Stan's birthday, which is November 7th.
That's pretty cool.
Yep, there you go. Christian Slater was given the role of the reporter Daniel upon death of River Phoenix. So River Phoenix was the original choice of the role.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Now, Slater donated his $250,000 salary to two of Phoenix's favorite charities.
It must be nice that you can take your $250,000 of Valor and be like, I don't need this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it's cool that he did that, so.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise wanted a private set, so tunnels were built to escort the actors to and from the set. And this was done so the vampire's makeup effects would remain a secret.
That's actually pretty cool.
It's clever. And all of the actors playing vampires were required to hang upside down for up to 30 minutes at a time during makeup. This is absurd. This would force all of the blood in their bodies to rush to their heads, causing the blood vessels in their face to bulge. The makeup artists would trace over the swollen veins, creating the eerie, translucent skinned look. Unfortunately for the actors, they would have to repeat the process several times over as the blood would quickly drain from their heads. This, in part, accounts for the lengthy makeup process.
Wow.
That's just insane. So, you have been,
Kirsten Dunst is...
Yeah, I'm sure.
Is hanging upside down for 30 mm-hmm. minutes.
Yeah.
At 12 years old. Well, mm-hmm. she's resilient. She's 12.
I mean, and I read that Brad Pitt, like, actually tried to get out of finishing the movie. He was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. He was not having a good time. And he was convinced to stay, mostly because of how much money he would have lost for breaking out of the
contract.
How much money would he have lost? But this makes sense. It was, like, millions of dollars. I don't remember what it was now. But, I mean, I understand. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? So the Stan Winston Studios produced, along with the enhanced color contact lenses, needle-sharp acrylic veneers that sit tightly against the actors' gums and covered their front teeth. They were made as thin as possible as not to impede the actor's speech. However, the paper-thin acrylic broke easily and required the studio to produce many sets for each vampire character in two different lengths, which were a shorter, more subtle set for dialogue scenes and then longer for, you know, like the attacks. And as a final touch, all of the vampire characters wore long acrylic fingernails, which, I mean, I did see. Stan Winston and his crew created a series of puppets for a sequence in which Lestat, after having his throat cut by Claudia, transforms from a beautiful golden boy to a desiccated shell.
Yeah, it does.
I thought that was interesting. I wondered how they did it. So they said it starts with Tom Cruise, and by the end, he's a sunken corpse. And it all happens in one shot, right in front of your eyes, through a combination of live-action animatronics and digital effects. So the Winston crew first videotaped Tom Cruise performing the transformation scene and used that as a reference in building a mechanizing Lestat head and body puppets. The body was puppeteered from underneath a table with miniature hydraulic systems creating a crawling motion. The puppet's head, neck, arm, and fingers were also hydraulically controlled. And to create a shriveling effect, air was released from an inflated airbag configured in the shape of Cruise's body and sewn around a skeletal form.
Gotcha.
That's a lot for that scene. Yeah. And they sculpted the facial disintegration in four stages, working over a life cast of Cruise. So they made four animatronic heads from the scopes that they made. The stage one head was a perfect replica of Cruise to ensure that the cut from the actor to the puppet would not be detected. From stage two through four, Winston and his artists referenced photographs of concentration camp survivors and AIDS victims.
Insane. Okay.
I know. The animatronic heads were mounted in succession onto the animatronic body puppet, then shot in 14 separate motion control passes. Digital Domain blended them through Digital Morph to create a 12-second cut that appeared continuous and seamless. Wow. Instead of doing, like, dissolves and all of that.
And this is 95.
94.
Well,
probably shot in 93. So, yeah, it's crazy, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. That's how they did that scene. I did wonder that because I thought it was well done.
Yeah.
When it didn't seem, like, overly, like, digital or CGI'd or anything like that.
Right.
In the novel, Louis claims not to be broody.
Okay.
I don't know how he is in the novel, but in the film, he definitely is. Due to the extensive and grueling production, Brad Pitt didn't enjoy making the film and became miserable, and that added to his performance. See, told you. But yeah, he is certainly like Twilight level broodiness. This surpassed Dracula as the highest grossing vampire film and itself held the record for a decade until surpassed by Van Helsing. However, this film remains the highest grossing R-rated vampire film.
Well, I bet Brad Pitt was like, after it was done and after he saw exactly what happened, I bet he was like, I'm glad I stuck with it.
Yeah.
But making it was terrible.
Now, I wonder, because this mentions the film remains the highest grossing R-rated vampire film.
Now, Sinners.
I was just thinking that. Well, I wonder if Sinners is going to dethrone them, because that's a big deal right now. So, be interested to see if that changes. According to Kirsten Dunst, Tom Cruise always sends her a coconut cake with white chocolate chips every Christmas. She refers to it as the Cruise cake, which she is always excited to receive and said that it never lasts a day.
Well, I'll be honest with you. If you can get on Tom Cruise's Christmas cake list, you're doing something right in Hollywood.
I've heard
Hollywood.
That's a big deal.
It is a really big deal. Like, it says that Tom Cruise values you.
So, she's been on that list a long time. Due to Anne Rice's fear that her novel was not being adapted because Lestat and Louis could be perceived as homosexuals, she rewrote Louis as a woman. So this is originally how it was in the script. At one point, she considered Cher for the role. However, they did change the character back to being male. So at one point, they were going to try and make it a little less homoerotic by making Louis into a woman.
Well, if you've seen the show...
The TV show now they're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely just dives right into it and probably makes it more so, I think, than the books.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because she had no...
Yeah, they dive right into that aspect of things. Yeah, like, but... Louis and... They're together.
Yeah, because if... I believe the show, they just have to refer to it as, like, it's inspired by Anne Rice, but it really has nothing technically to do with her or the books. You know, they took the characters. Yeah. But, I mean, when you watch this movie, I can understand her fear because, I mean, like, you know, it probably would have been more graphic if it was made in 2025.
Oh,
but there is enough context there with all of those vampires about how they feel about each other. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even Armand, you're just like, what is with Louis? Like, why does everybody want to get with this kid?
Everybody loves Louis.
Yeah, like...
Very attractive vampire.
Maybe it was because it was Brad Pitt.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely wasn't going to be lonely out there in the streets.
Yeah.
And another fun fact, or not so fun fact, the film was a subject of controversy due to inspiring a real-life crime shortly after the theatrical release. On November 17th, so remember this came out on the 11th, so this is 6 days later. November 17th, 94, a man named Daniel Sterling and his girlfriend Lisa Stellwagen watched the film. The next day, Sterling stabbed Stellwagen 7 times in her chest and back and sucked the blood from her wounds. Fortunately, Stellwagen survived and Sterling was arrested. He claimed in court that the film influenced his plan, and the jury convicted him of attempted first-degree murder, among several other charges.
Wow.
Don't do that.
Art imitating real life.
Don't do that. I mean, if you do some sort of weird blood-sucking thing and it's consensual, that's fine. But don't stab somebody multiple times and then suck their blood. Because you'll go to prison, probably.
Is that your personal opinion, or is that a public service announcement for our listeners?
I mean, you can do what you want in your private time. I'm just telling you that is not the way to do it.
I get you.
Just saying. Unless you like to be in prison.
I get you.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's all I got.
So, the film opens with Christian Slater and Brad Pitt in this room. And they're like, oh, I want to tell you my life story, basically. He's like, you need a lot of tape. He's like, oh, don't worry, I got a lot of tape with me. He was like, but before this, he was like, I saw you in that bar. He was like, Christian Slater was like, oh, were you going to drink my blood and, like, kill me? And he was like, yes, but you don't have to worry about that now. I want to tell you my story. So, when you go in there, the room is dark. And he is like, well, when they're getting ready to record, Louis's like, we can't begin like this. So he flips on the light and mm-hmm. actually shows himself mm-hmm. to the character, mm-hmm. to Christian Slater's character. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, man, now he's really into it. Mm-hmm. And so he basically goes from his time when he was in New Orleans. He was a slave owner. He was like, he owned a plantation mm-hmm. back in the day. Mm-hmm. Have you ever noticed that a lot of vampire movies are based around New Orleans?
Well, it's not supposed to be like the vampire capital.
Yes.
So.
So I can understand. I can understand that.
A lot of French vampires.
But in the movie, Louis lost his wife and child mm-hmm. like a year before he was turned into a vampire. And he was like, oh, he was like heartbroken. Mm-hmm. He was just like, I want to die. And he would go to all these dangerous places like the card games at night. Mm-hmm. And a guy thought he was cheating. So he pulls out a gun and he's like, do it. And he didn't even flinch. She was just like, do it. But that's how Lestat found mm-hmm. Louis. So he was going from the bar with, he had a whore with him, prostitute, and the pimp was going to rob him, the girl's pimp. Mm-hmm. And then Lestat ended up killing him.
Yep.
And then drinking his blood. Mm-hmm. And then that's how they
met.
Mm-hmm. So what did you think of the movie?
No, I liked it. I've never seen the whole thing, so.
Yeah. I like it because it's so immersive. They do a lot of character development. You, at the end of the movie, you actually care about Lestat and Louis. You want to.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because, I mean, I can't decide. Like, Lestat is such an asshole. But at the same time, he's such an interesting character. So it's like, when they were killing him, I was just like, God damn, he's like the most interesting character in this whole movie.
Yeah. And
Claudia just lit him up.
So. Well, Lestat makes Louis, mm-hmm. and they were together for like years. Mm-hmm. And then they went to it was in the United States because they went to, so they found Claudia during the Black Plague era. Mm-hmm. And Louis was actually hungry.
Because he was eating rats and stuff, right? And Lestat's like, the fuck is wrong with you? Why are you doing that?
So they found, we're kind of jumping around because it's such a long movie. We're going to mm-hmm. just kind of give you the highlights of it. But they found her. He started biting her.
Louis did.
And then Lestat found him and then made her. But I guess there was a law in vampire lore that you can't make it somebody so innocent a vampire. And Louis was just like, fuck all that noise. I mean, later in the movie, he was like, I see now that she shouldn't have been made. Mm-hmm. But back then,
I'm talking about
Lestat. Like, he was like, fuck all that noise. He's like, I'm going to do what I want.
That's what I'm talking about. Lestat's the most interesting character. I mean, yeah, he's an asshole. But at the end of the day, like, he did ask Louis, like, you know, basically he was just like, he could either kill Louis or you can join me in the afterlife, right?
And see, that's what I don't understand about Louis is because Tom Cruise's Lestat gave him a choice. He was like, you can die here or you can join me. Yeah. And he clearly joined him.
Yeah, and then I'm like, now you're going to complain about it?
And then he's unhappy for like 200 years. And I'm just like, so bro, you had the opportunity to do this. You mm-hmm. could have said no. Just kill me now.
Exactly. That's what I'm just like, dude, seriously? And then you're going to complain mm-hmm. about it. And then he doesn't like the way Lestat does anything. But I'm just like, Lestat's just being a vampire. I mean, if you don't want to be a vampire, you shouldn't have agreed to be a vampire.
Right.
Because, I mean, I wouldn't want to be murdered either by a vampire, but Lestat is a vampire, and he is just doing vampire things.
Right.
And enjoying it.
Right. And that's the thing, is Lestat enjoyed it. Even Claudia enjoyed it. Louis did not. Mm-hmm. I mean, he got some kind of comfort out of having Claudia there, mm-hmm. because it's like a daddy-daughter relationship, and I guess he was lonely, mm-hmm. and it made him not so lonely because she was with him. Mm-hmm. I thought that part was weird. I was just like, well, clearly...
I think Lestat was saying...
Because of his...
The innocence thing, because, like, he was just... Lestat was just too in-your-face to... quote unquote, I guess, like evil as a vampire for Louis. So he was trying to give him a companion who would be maybe more on his level, which, I mean, it's kind of rude to Louis because it's like you're just basically like a child.
Yeah.
But it's worse because you shouldn't turn children because they have no filters and they don't really understand morals like an adult would.
Right.
If that's, in theory, assuming that vampires have some sort of morals, which I guess is heavily implied they must if you're not supposed to turn children, because they can be just rampaging, thoughtless yeah. monsters.
They can just go and they feed and feed and feed and feed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. mm-hmm. I mean, they used to kill like two or three or four at night. That's mm-hmm. what Louis was saying. Mm-hmm. But so would Louis just sit around and watch this?
I'm guessing.
And then after this, he would be like, "All right, I'm gonna go and eat rats."
I mean,
you don't think he indulged even a little bit?
I feel like he would have had to, but they, right. I mean, it's implied he wants to stick with the rat thing, so.
Right.
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe, like, they're out here killing everybody, and he's just like, oh, I'm just going to hang out.
Mm-hmm. I thought Claudia was really interesting, too, because she obviously started off as a confused child.
Right.
And, you know, they treated her like a doll almost, you know, dressing her up and everything, but... as she got older, I mean, she learned more and more about the world, so she still became more of an adult.
Right.
Even though she was still physically a child, which right. I know was hard, I think, for both of them to deal with, Lestat and Louis. But particularly Lestat, I think he just assumed she would be just this cute little vampire doll forever.
Right. That's why he gave her a doll every... on her birthday every
she
year.
She did not like that.
She definitely did not like that.
After a while.
Yeah, every year you give me a doll. Is it my birthday? And he was like, oh, I didn't realize. He knew exactly what he was doing. Mm-hmm. He just didn't he didn't hope that she realized what yeah. he was doing. That's the thing.
And, I mean, the whole thing, too, the reason they got into a fight was because, again, she didn't really understand how to express herself. Because she still was very much like a kid in that way. And Lestat doesn't listen to anybody. So that's why they were butting heads at the end of the day.
So you think if they would have made a woman, that she would have been better? Like there was a four, instead of a threesome?
Well, if she was a grown person, I mean, yeah, it wouldn't have been the same.
But what I'm saying is, like, if they would have made a woman, brought a woman in, to help with her, do you think she would have been better? Because at the end of the day, she wanted a woman to be a companion with her.
I mean, I don't know. She seemed slightly better for, like, the 2 seconds that that did happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the end of the day, Claudia was still going to be a menace.
I gotcha.
Don't you? I mean, I don't... I think it was fair that she wanted a female around versus just two men.
Yeah.
But... I don't think much would have changed with her attitude at the end of the day.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that. And then when they kill them, mm-hmm. Sammy read to you all about that scene, but they basically, there's a rule when you're feeding on somebody, you have to stop when the heart stops. Because I think it's dangerous for vampires.
Clearly it is, based on what we saw happen to Lestat.
So, he fed off of dead blood, and he was like, he must have drank a lot, too. Because coming from the neck wound, when they cut off his neck, like, the blood just started seeping out. And I was like, did he really drink that much? Mm-hmm. But clearly he must have, like, just with a straw, just sucked it all up.
You can't tell the difference, though, I guess. Well, she said she warmed it or did something, yeah, right?
Like Claudia, or she put something in it, I can't mm-hmm. remember, mm-hmm. and it kept it warm.
Yeah.
That's why he didn't know. So, that's but right. He kept begging for Louis to put him in his coffin. What do you think that would have done? I guess healed him?
Maybe. Maybe that would have given him a chance to...
Sleep it off?
Yeah, like rejuvenate.
Okay.
You know, fix whatever problem was by drinking that, but that didn't work since that little bitch just came in there and sliced him open.
Yeah, and they took him to the swamps. Mm-hmm. And
I was just like, damn, because I had not seen this all the way through, right? And I was like, shit, that's what they did to Lestat. They just dumped him in with the crocodiles.
Well, in my thinking is, like, where did Lestat stay when he was out there? Somewhere dark, obviously.
I'm sure he could find somewhere to
under the trees or something like that. And then he had to eat rodents and reptilians and everything.
Whatever he could find.
Whatever he could find just to mm-hmm. have enough strength. I mean, when he pops up right before they're leaving, he doesn't look bad, but he didn't look.
He doesn't look like he did.
Exactly. He looks like a shell of a man.
And I'm just thinking, too, I mean, I'm imagining in Louisiana, New Orleans, that sort of general area, there's probably a lot. It's old. So there's probably a lot of crypts and things he could have gone to hang out in.
Yeah.
Like they did earlier in the movie.
Yeah. You know,
just pull a spike and just live in a crypt for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so then they set him on fire. They're getting there. He comes in, and then back in those days, it's older days, they get the kerosene, mm-hmm. and that's the lantern, and they throw it at him, and it sets Lestat on fire.
There's lots of fires in this movie.
Man, but Lestat gets fucked up several times in this.
I mean, again.
And I can understand why he's so pissed.
Yeah, Lestat is an asshole. There's no getting around that, but seriously, you didn't have to do all that to him, you know?
Yeah, like you cut his head off, you cut his throat, mm-hmm. you set him on fire.
Mm-hmm. Pretty intense.
I mean, by the time we actually end up seeing him at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. he actually looks pretty normal.
Yeah, I'm assuming
because
it's been such a long time at that point that he's had plenty of time to feed on, going back to feeding on people and being out in society to find people to feed on, whatever he's doing.
Right.
I'm assuming because it's been so long by the time we were in the 1993-94 when the interview takes place.
Right.
So that makes sense.
So when we when they leave, Claudia and not Lestat but Louis, they're on a boat, mm-hmm. and they're like, a strange plague happens over the crew. Mm-hmm. Because you guys are feeding on them.
But it didn't affect those two.
Yeah.
They were unaffected, luckily.
They were unaffected. Mm-hmm. And they kept to themselves. Well, no shit, because you guys were the cause of it. Mm-hmm. So they get...
I guess that's how Louis justifies it. Like, he's trying to justify what he did.
Yeah.
Oh, like, it was a strange plague. Well, fucker, you know you guys did that.
You guys were the cause of that plague.
Like, are you still so, like, hating yourself that this is how you want to tell the story? Or are we just supposed to know you're lying and you know we know and I don't know.
Like, I'm assuming when he's on the boats, yeah, there are rats, but there are only so many rats.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the water. I mean, they're not going to collect more.
In that time, he's going to have to feed on people.
Right. And I don't think Claudia ever would just be like, yeah, let me eat a rat.
Yeah. I think she's too much of a snob to do that.
Yeah, she's not going to do all that.
So they get to England, and they're searching around for vampires. That's why they wanted to go to the...
They're looking for more vampires.
Right.
She did research and all that to find more.
They wanted to know the cause of it. Like, mm-hmm. how did we get to there? So Claudia's researching at night, vampires, urban legends, all that mm-hmm. stuff. And then a vampire ends up finding Louis mm-hmm. when he's out walking. And then they invite him to a theater. And so they're vampires pretending to be humans, but for a bunch of humans.
Mm-hmm. And they put on a play.
And when they were in this play, they basically kill this woman, mm-hmm. right? But nobody actually seems like it's a real thing.
They don't know it's real. They think it's all...
It's just part of the play.
Yeah.
So they basically witness this woman getting killed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And... they're like, well, come back tomorrow. We'll do the same show tomorrow.
Over and over again. Yeah.
And that's how they're feeding. But the vampires actually live beneath the theater. So Armand brings them down and shows them around, and they're like, oh, because Claudia is so young, mm-hmm. they made her put her life in danger. Mm-hmm. And that's why they were like, oh, we're going to go after her, is because she was so young. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And I thought Armand Antonio Banderas was going to be in it more.
Yeah.
And he didn't show up forever. And then finally, when he was in the movie, I was like, oh, I thought he was like a bigger character. I mean, I think he probably is in the book, but obviously the movie has to adjust.
Right. Right. And then, as they're walking out of the tour, Louis is thinking about, so vampires can read your mind. And Louis is thinking about Lestat, and he is like, well, he was like, I wronged him in a way. And then one of the other vampires was like, how did you wrong him? And then he was like, oh, he said something. He was like, there's only two rules in our vampire, kill your own kind and make somebody innocent. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, oh, we're going to go after Louis and Claudia mm-hmm. after that.
Well, and I guess Claudia was the bigger target because she was young and she technically attempted to kill Lestat. Louis is just standing there watching it happen, so I feel like he's just as guilty. But she technically is the one that did it.
Yeah. So. That's why she probably died.
Because they just put him away.
And then they were like, sentry in a box for you. Mm-hmm. And then Armand saved him. Mm-hmm. And Louis was
what
like,
what did Louis do?
Fuck all that noise. So he came back.
Set it on fire.
He came back the next day, like the next
third
night.
Third fire.
And set the thing on fire.
Well, no. Yeah, no, yeah. Third fire. Because we had the first fire when he was all pissy, just about his life.
Yeah,
and
about he burned the his plant first, station home.
Yeah, and told all the workers to run away. And then the second time was the fire involving Lestat. And basically burn like the town down. I yes. mean, when they were just floating off to England, they're just watching the mess he made, but whatever. And then third fire is where I'm gonna basically kill all these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
That live underground. Yeah.
Yeah. But he ended up killing all of them.
Yeah. He was pretty mad about them killing Claudia, even though she deserved it.
So. Yeah. I mean, who was your favorite vampire? Out of all, you probably like Lestat.
Definitely okay. not Louis.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I think Brad Pitt as Louis was a good fit. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there's nothing wrong with what he was doing as a character. But Lestat, to me, was much more interesting.
Yeah.
As a vampire.
It gave a reason to watch the movie, like, keeping the movie going. Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%. Louis was just so, like... I'm a vampire. I'm so heartbroken about. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of Vampire Diaries. Is the brother?
That's
is,
what I'm saying. Like Vampire Diaries, Twilight, like all those like super always, melodramatic.
Things. They always pull from like other movies like mm-hmm. this, but I'm just like, you're a vampire. You signed up to be a vampire. Be a vampire. Mm-hmm. Don't spend your afterlife hating the fact that you're a vampire.
I mean, it's like when you look at Buffy, right? Angel is moody because he has a soul.
Right. So
that's why he's all whining sometimes about being a vampire, right? He's just like, oh, this sucks. But he doesn't just, I mean, sometimes he wallows in it, but he tends to just be like, you know, I'm going to use this to do something productive.
Right.
I feel like Louis was like, I'm just going to cry about it and complain.
For 200 years.
And eat rats and be miserable. Which I understand it was different times. It's probably easier for Angel to work around things nowadays. But, you know, it just makes me laugh. Because then you look at the other characters who get turned, you know, while we're watching Buffy. And they're all instantly just like, yeah, we used to be friends, like Harmony.
Yeah.
But now I'm probably going to have to kill you. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
And it just makes more sense to me to be like that if you're going to be turned as a vampire versus Moody.
You would think that Angelus and Louis would be alive at the same time.
I guess technically they all of these characters could have at one point because Angel is so old.
Right. He's over 240 years old.
Right. And Walt, Spike, Drusilla, yeah. They're pretty from around these times too. I mean, they all would have been... Darla, all of them would have been around at the same time, but we all know who they would have been friends with, and it's not Louis.
Oh, yeah. It would have been Lestat, for sure.
Mm-hmm. They probably would have been like, the fuck is up with Claudia? We can't hang out with her either.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, they probably would have been like, why did you even make her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think they would have
approved. Even Angelus would have been like, what the fuck is her? What's going on here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
So what would you rate this movie?
I mean, I thought it didn't drag. I thought it was really interesting. I think the vampire changes, which this one didn't do a whole lot of the, like, let's make them look
monster
super different as, you know, they're attacking people. And right. I think that's okay. You know, you either want to commit to that or just do the more subtle, like, you didn't notice the crazy teeth and I'm going to suck your blood now. But I mean, like, I would probably give this like a 9.
Oh, I would easily 9.5.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was good. The things I don't like are not a comment on the movie. It's the characters. And again, it's not even a comment on, I think she did a bad job with the character she created. I think they're just annoying, but they're designed to be the way they are.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah.
That's just how they played it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I thought it was good. I would definitely watch it again.
Like, one thing I, like, what you were saying is the faces, mm-hmm. when they are vampires, they don't go like a Buffy. Like, you can actually clearly see them
mm-hmm.
being dead.
Yeah.
They are just, they have really, like, creepy eyes.
We did discuss that. I liked the eyes. I thought, especially on Brad Pitt, which I know probably yeah. hated those contacts, but they looked very cool.
Yeah, the eyes, like, and their fingernails would grow, and they would get, like, all veiny.
And I like how they showed Claudia when she's pissed off. She's just like, I'm going to get rid of all my hair, all of that, you know, change my appearance. But that's not how it works. So that they did it a way to explain why some of their looks never change without having to be in your face about it.
Yeah.
You know, we just had that one scene. Okay, well, that's why Louis and Lestat forever have the same hairstyle, because this is how they were when they turned.
Right.
This is how they are forever.
Right.
And I liked the makeup. It's, again, sucks for the actors, but I did like the makeup for the very translucent with the little veiny hints.
Yes.
And I read somewhere, maybe I was doing research for this probably, that back in like the aristocratic days, that's how people wanted to look, was they wanted to look like very pale, and some of them would draw like kind of veins on their face. I thought that was fascinating. That was like an in look, so they would have fit in very early on.
Think that'll ever come back around in our society?
I mean, I don't see it coming around now. We do some weird makeup trends, but I don't necessarily see that. I think just at Halloween, probably.
Gotcha.
Or maybe if you're super goth, maybe it's in the goth scenes. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Would you rewatch this movie?
Yeah, I said that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I would rewatch this. It was a good film, I think.
Yeah, it didn't drag. It was, now you can understand why that's one of my favorite movies, is because it just sucks you. I like the writing of Anne Rice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, we've read the book. The book is more exciting, but you only have so much screen time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they tried to do what they did with the book, it would probably have been a 5-hour movie.
Well, that's why I'm assuming they wanted to do a series, but the series, again, is not following the book series.
No, it's not.
But it'd be interesting maybe to take this and follow the true books.
Yeah.
And do, you know, continue on with the series as she had written it too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's Interview with the Vampire. Let us know what you guys think about this movie, what parts you liked about this movie, if you would rewatch it,
mm-hmm.
what you didn't like about the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like and subscribe. Definitely subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com
mm-hmm.
to see this video. You'll be able to see this on like anywhere you get your podcasts. So yep.
mm-hmm.
definitely subscribe.
Yeah.
And, remember, stay spooky, and everybody's entitled to one good scare.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast is produced and hosted by Robbie and Sammy Brooksby as part of the Limitless Broadcasting Podcast Network. Post-production and intro by Sammy Brooksby. Follow the show on Instagram at BoogeymanPod. You can also follow the Limitless Broadcasting Company at Limitless Broadcasting and your horror hosts at Robert1950 Studios and at The Samalam. We also have a TikTok at 1950 Studios. Email your creepy comments and spooky suggestions to us at boogeymanpod@gmail.com. Don't forget, everyone is entitled to one good scare. Have a horrific week!